Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio on Monday, April 11th. It's our 10:30 show. I have a tickle in my throat. There's that cough. Thanks for listening this morning. We got a good one. We're going to be talking about the new law, ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, and I hope they do, and personalized learning. We've done a lot of shows on both of those topics, but not together. So I think it's going to be good. We got the experts from Knowledge Works. I'll tell you about them in a second. We've got Matt Williams and Lillian Pace standing by. I'll give them a real introduction in just a couple of seconds. I want you to know that Knowledge Works, who are good friends of mine, is a nonprofit social enterprise focused on innovative education approaches to personalized learning, the advancement of aligned policies, and the development of communities and educators to build and sustain the three keywords: vibrant learning ecosystems. Their on-the-ground work includes partnership with schools through competency education and EdWorks early college schools, as well as with communities through their group called Strive Together. Okay, it's knowledgeworks.org, and they tweet at KnowledgeWorks. All right, and we've done a lot of shows together, and everyone's better than the one before. So that should leave large shoes to fill for Matt and Lillian, okay, as we go. They've been here before. All right, and we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. And I hope you follow us over there. We do put out a direct link to the show, and it's obviously there all day and every day, and you can go back and listen to the show whenever you want, okay, again, at EduTalk Radio. We put our new schedule up for the week. It's a good schedule this week, and that's at education-talkradio.org, where we will archive this show. Okay, ESSA and personalized learning, ladies first. Lillian, hello, it's Larry.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me today.
It's my pleasure indeed. Okay, let me see. Are you calling you either in Virginia or Cincinnati from what I'm seeing here on the phone lines? Where are you?
I live in Alexandria, Virginia, which is right outside of the Washington, D.C. area. So right where all the action's happening on Every Student Succeeds Act regulations right now.
Hear, hear. I love it. Okay, and Lillian, by the way, is the Senior Director of National Policy, okay, at Knowledge Works. And Matt, how are you today, Matt Williams?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good, as a matter of fact. A little throat tickle, but other than that, I had the flu a couple of weeks ago, and up here was a coughing flu, all right? I was coughing and hacking for 2.5 weeks, and that's all behind me now. It's reduced now to a little throat tickle, so I'm happy. I'm a happy guy. Aren't you sorry you asked, Matt?
I'm glad you gave me a real answer. Typically, it's just, you know, the typical fine. So
yeah,
I'm glad you're feeling better.
I am fine, okay, but it was a rough couple of weeks, and this flu up here was just terrible. Everybody should know this. It's knowledgeworks.org. Matt tweets at Matt A. Williams. Lillian tweets at Lillian Pace, P-A-C-E, and KnowledgeWorks at KnowledgeWorks, and they're good folks to follow. Okay, Matt is the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy, and we're going to start. You guys can't see each other. Obviously, one's in Cincinnati, one's in Virginia. Okay, so let's talk. Let's go to Lillian first, and Lil, if this isn't your question, you can swing it over to Matt. Talk about ESSA and personalized learning. And again, I want to say I've done a lot of shows on both, but we haven't put the two together, so I'm looking forward to this show. Lillian, ESSA and personalized learning. You're on.
Absolutely. Well, my guess would be that the shows you've done on personalized learning in the past probably focused a lot on policy barriers that folks would say, oh, it's a great thing to do, but there's just these systemic barriers in our way that make it impossible to really do this at scale. And the incredibly exciting news coming out of the new ESSA or ESSA law, as everyone inside the Beltway here in Washington is calling it,
Wait a minute! I got to stop you. I never heard that. I never heard that acronym. SLR. Is that what you said?
ESSA. ESSA. ESSA.
Oh, ESSA. Okay, thank you. Just spelling out the acronym. I got it. Saying out the acronym. I got it.
We can't say we love it, but once you know the Secretary of Education says it, then everyone follows suit. But
well, then
but
let's
yeah,
call
I mean,
it the SSA. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. The incredible news coming out of this reauthorization is that really almost every single barrier that existed to personalized learning is now removed at the federal level, and that's incredibly different climate than where we were pre-December. And so now the exciting piece of news is, you know, how are states going to take advantage of this new opportunity and really, you know, take the flexibility, you know, do it in a responsible way and knit together a really compelling vision for personalized learning. We know that states have been, you know, very eager to do personalized learning type strategies statewide, and now they literally have the opportunity. So it's going to be an exciting, you know, 18 months as we watch states, you know, put together their visions, the department finish their regulations, and, you know, we move into full-scale implementation.
I think it's wonderful as well. I'm glad No Child Left Behind is gone. And when you say there were barriers, I just want to cover this, Lil. Okay, were the barriers the fact, if I may, that the feds had too much power under No Child Left Behind, and now it's back to the states, which I think is good, all right? And
yeah,
is that what you
yeah.
mean by the barriers? Yeah.
Well, I think that's sort of the overarching theme that we're seeing coming out of this reauthorization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you mentioned, there was significant pushback against the federal prescription of the last 15 years under No Child Left Behind. And while there were some incredibly important policies that No Child Left Behind put in place, most specifically around equity, I think there was still a lot of pushback to say, you know, we want to do something different, and the federal government shouldn't be the one defining exactly the path forward for the students in my state. And so we did see this thematic shift in every page of the bill back to state and local leaders. But what barriers we're seeing removed for personalized learning specifically, there's really, and KnowledgeWorks actually put out a great publication. I encourage you to visit our website, KnowledgeWorks.org/ESSA, to look at the resource specifically. But we put together a side-by-side that shows each new opportunity that exists for personalized learning, you know, as opposed to what the New Child Left Behind had in place. And the most important barriers that are gone are around accountability and assessment. No surprise, those are sort of the two big A's in federal K-12 education policy. You know, so within accountability, states now have flexibility to design accountability systems that value personalized learning indicators as opposed to just a narrow look at math and English language arts test performance, which is still important and still should be included and will be included.
Oh, sure.
But now they have a lot of leeway to incorporate a more comprehensive view of student learning, which is fantastic. They also have the opportunity to emphasize growth, which in a personalized learning environment is really important. We want to make sure that every student is growing and on a customized trajectory, as opposed to just looking at those that are performing at grade level or higher. In the assessment space, so, you know, we have a national opt-out movement happening around the country because people are so fed up with our assessment system.
Agreed.
And the incredibly
Agreed.
Promising news is that, you know, the new ESSA law provides states with an opportunity to address that movement head on and do something radically different, to create assessments that are useful, that parents and students and educators can derive data from in real time and actually customize a learning pathway for each student. If I'm a parent, I want my kid taking that test because I can see immediately how my student's performing. I can do something about it. The No Child Left Behind assessments, they were high stakes into the year, and the data didn't come down to the local leaders until the next year, so no one ever did anything with it. So we're really excited about the promise that exists in this new law to transform the assessment conversation nationwide as well.
Well said. And what you just said, I just wrote this down. The new law on personalized learning is like a, quote, an IEP for everyone.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, that's really what personalized learning is. I mean, you know, it really is. Matt, are you as happy about all this as Lil is? Matt Williams?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it provides a great platform for opportunity. I mean, I think when you look at some of the comparisons between No Child Left Behind, between kind of the Obama administration's waiver package and now ESTA,
yeah.
I think there's some great opportunity there. I mean, I think we also got to understand that it's an imperfect law as well, as all laws are, in that it really is, to me, I think, a bridge law, in that there was universal dissatisfaction with No Child Left Behind. And now we have ESSA, which came out at what we could argue as is a really hyper-partisan time. We got a bill passed.
Right.
And I really see this as kind of a learning bill. How do we begin to learn from states, learn from those that are going to push some innovation here, and then hopefully in a shorter amount of time than it took to reauthorize No Child Left Behind, we could actually potentially get another bill that would advance personalized learning even more. Because I think you still have some common elements that are left over, and frankly, at least one piece of it should be left over from No Child Left Behind, and that's the disaggregation of data by subgroups, and really making sure that all of our students, we have a read on where all of our students, regardless of ethnic or background or minority background or free and reduced lunch socioeconomic background. I think that's really important, and it also helped kind of in place the testing regimen that we've had 3-8 and once in high school. But if you look at, to kind of piggyback on what Lillian kind of articulated, if you look at some of the flexibility within school improvement, I think it's pretty substantial when you look at where the Obama administration in particular had their four models for school transformation, with kind of transformation, turnaround, restart, and closure, which were really difficult and often just kind of constraining to states as they worked with the lowest performing schools. But in ESSA, you have comprehensive support and improvement schools. So those would be kind of your lowest 5%, the ones that are persistently low performing. And then you have some that are going to be targeted support targeted for support and improvement. And those are kind of like those that have achievement gaps and et cetera. But there's no prescription on how you go about intervening in those schools and transforming those schools. And so there's flexibility there. And I think the other piece is to piggyback on the assessment pieces that Lillian kind of articulated is, there's a pilot program to allow states to begin to shift to more competency-based systems for seven states to kind of do that. That's huge learning, again, with the eye towards the bridge policy idea of ESSA. That is going to give us really rich data to understand how to move our entire system as these seven states, whoever those states might be, begin to tackle that.
Yeah, and by the way, I like the way you're using that word flexibility, which I really like, and I always like to say this. I know No Child Left Behind didn't work, and it was really a lot of burden on schools, states, and teachers. It didn't work. But I always like to say this because I interviewed folks who were responsible for putting it together. Nobody meant to ruin education, so to speak. Okay, they meant to do something better. All right, and it didn't work out as well as everybody wanted it to. But the intentions were good. All right, and what you just said, Matt, really struck me, that it's a bridge law, the new ESSA, okay, that we might have something else come down the pike soon, too. And I just think that's a really important thing. These things aren't written in concrete. No Child Left Behind was around amazingly, like you said, 16 years. Now we're going to try the new one. And by the way, it is now funded at least for a year, all right, which is really good, which brings me to my next question. I'll go back to Lillian. I don't know if you agree with what I just said, Matt. I didn't mean to, before I go back to Lillian, do you want to comment on what I said?
No, I mean, I think that's I would agree with you fully. I mean, I think that the architects of No Child Left Behind, I mean, they wouldn't have named it that way. I don't think politicians are that craven to name something and then try to actually hurt kids.
The intent by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, no. I think that it took us some huge step forward. It actually, the bill worked in through the lens of, it allowed us for the first time, I think, to truly focus on every student by disaggregating the data, by really looking at that. And I think it has allowed for strides within the equity community and those that care about that. I think there are some things, and we should all care about that. There are things that really have advanced things. And so to me, this is kind of the next step, is how do we really take that disaggregation, allow for flexibility, allow for states to really be the catalytic engines to redesign the system.
Hear, hear. I agree with you. And it reminds me of the Affordable Care Act, or what they call Obamacare, and which is just health care. All right? It's not perfect. It's not perfect. But it's there. It gives us something to talk about, and hopefully the next time as it evolves, just like this, it gets better. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of this. And it gives you something to focus on, talk about, see what's wrong with it, make it better. And that's what I think, well, that's the state we're in now. But now I have a question for Lillian. And Lil, you know, we all talk about personalized learning. And personalized learning means that literally every kid, so to speak, we want to engage every kid at that where they are. My question is, Lil, how do teachers possibly find the time to do this? Because I like this idea of personalized learning. Everybody does. All right, but can it be done in the system that we have now, regardless of a federal law or whatever? What are your thoughts on that? Is it the it may be right, but is it possible? Lil, and by the way, that's a PhD thesis. If you can answer that in 5 minutes, I'll call you Dr. Pace from now on.
Well, hopefully, I can do it in less than five. What I always say when people ask me this question is absolutely, and it's because we're operating in a very different time, and we have to shift the way we think about education from that traditional learning experience and, you know, always in sort of the same classroom with one teacher, you know, teaching to 20 students, 30 students sitting in a desk staring at it, right? We have to move away from that image of good schooling, right? There was no proof that that really worked. In fact, we probably were missing everybody in that classroom at some point during the day because we were teaching to one person's trajectory. And so the personalized approach provides us with a very different way to reach every student. Now, as a teacher, how do you do that? Well, there's a couple of things that have changed that have made it far easier for teachers to do this. And I'm not claiming this is easy, but there's some fundamental shifts that have happened that have made it more promising. One is we actually have high standards across the board for teachers to benchmark every student against, right? So we now have a strong foundation that we can look to and know where each student in the class is supposed to get to, and then we can scaffold instruction from there. So that's the most important piece, right? Secondly, we now have significant advances in technology that have made it possible to support teachers in reaching every student. So one of the worst myths out there is that technology is going to replace teaching. Well, whoever believes that, no offense.
I don't know if people believe that anymore. It's so ridiculous. It's that, and I agree, that is the most ridiculous thing. I don't know how that one started, but it ain't happening.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, any good teacher will be able to tell you, you know, technology empowers me. It helps me do so much so that I can then shift my attention to really, you know, really wonderful, high-quality one-on-one instruction with students, and that's awesome. And so I think that the advances in technology are incredibly promising. And there are a number of companies, I should say, that are, I mean, if you talk to any testing company, any educational development company, personalized learning is like the gold mine right now. Like, they're all focused on trying to figure out how to do that and produce really good products to support teachers. So, we're hopeful we're going to see some really great things coming out of that. And then the third piece that I talk about, too, is we have actually shifted and are shifting to a system where learning is happening 24 hours a day, right, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Learning is not
I hope.
Happening. Yeah, right. Let's hope. Incredibly rich and powerful partners in our communities that are contributing to the educational experience of students. And so, you know, what we're seeing is teachers are working with people inside and outside of the school building to design you know, multiple pathways for their students to master those standards that we know all students need to master in order to graduate. And so, you know, what's exciting as a student, you know, so as a parent, I know my daughters, when they go to school, they're going to have a number of different options before them on how they want to demonstrate mastery of a set of standards. That makes school much more exciting. As a teacher, it makes it much more fun because your students are engaged, you're meeting them where they are, and you have a whole host of people to support you in your teaching experience by expanding your scope of reach. And so I think there's just a number of different elements on the table right now that make teaching a more exciting opportunity. And hopefully won't have them working too late at night grading papers.
And by the way, I'll give you another line to use if somebody says technology is going to replace teachers. Just simply tell them an MRI didn't replace doctors. A better didn't replace dentists. Okay? It's just a better way to do it, you know, and you're professionals and you look for better ways to do it as opposed to what I used, a chalk and a mimeo machine when I was teaching. Okay, and that worked. And Matt, let me ask you, okay, Matt, do you have any concerns with the ESSA? Are you concerned that maybe we're doing too much too soon, if that's possible? What are your thoughts on this? And personalized learning, Matt. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got I think there's a couple of concerns here. I mean, I think we've got to look at where we were from an historical standpoint. At one point, the states did have control, and equity unfortunately suffered under those that kind of structure, and that helped lead to No Child Left Behind. I mean,
mm-hmm.
these things don't happen
mm-hmm.
in a vacuum, and so it was, goodness, our states aren't doing a good enough job of focusing on all kids. We need to make sure we correct that in federal law with No Child Left Behind, and the disaggregation came in and the testing 3 through 8 and once in high school and the structures, high standards, et cetera, all came in. So I think, you know, I think there's a concern among some that we could potentially return back to that, the whole pendulum thing. I think the other thing, there's two other things, and they're somewhat connected. Is concerns that I have is looking at it strictly from a state perspective. States, I wonder sometimes if states have the capacity to really lead these shifts. I think they do in some states. Mm-hmm. Others, I do have some question marks about. I think that if you look at what states have had to deal with over a relatively short amount of time, implementing new standards, and in some states, they backed away from the Common Core and went to creating new standards. So that's even a heavier lift. Or implementing the consortia-based assessments and/or other-based assessments. Not included in that is the professional development, the technology infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You lay on top of that the ESEA waiver opportunities that most states wrote to and then have had to update. There's a lot of pull on these state departments of education. Which leads me to kind of the third kind of concern is that states don't actively embrace this opportunity as wholeheartedly as they could or should, in notion that, you know, kind of the inertia of it, that they may just turn back in kind of their waiver, for lack of a better phrase. Here's our waiver. We've adjusted a little bit for ESSA, but here's all the opportunity we're going to take at this point. And so I think that, not to mention an overlay on that, the notion that state superintendents of education change jobs at a really frequent rate. They're around 2 years that they're in their position.
I did not know that statistic. I did not know that statistic. I know superintendents are 3 to 4 of districts. I didn't know that about state superintendents.
Yeah, they used to be closer to what a district-level superintendent is, but over recent years, if you just look at, say, the last 5 years, it's a really rapid transition. You know, in the state of Ohio, over the last, say, 4 years, we've had 4 state superintendents. Just to give you an example. So, again, I think that the notion of kind of making sure we don't boomerang back to pre-NCLB, the notion of capacity, and with that kind of this transition, and the notion of inertia are three kind of concerns that I would have about kind of the law, and states really seizing the opportunity.
I hope they do it. You know, it always strikes me, if I may, and let me just start off this statement by saying my beloved daughter-in-law is from Mississippi, and she lives with my son in Louisiana. So I'm familiar with those states, okay, by personal relationships. But it seems that, and I just wanted to preface by saying this, some of those states, and I'll use the Deep South as an example, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, they're always 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, okay, in terms of rankings in education, okay? They're not stupid people, okay, but they're always down way below, and I'm always wondering why they don't want more help from the feds. Wouldn't you rather be number 20 than number 45? You know, and what you say, you know, for some reason there are certain states that just don't want help, yet they're not doing well on their own, and that is a danger. Matt, your thoughts on that, if any? Or you've just given them, but if you'll say more.
Well, I think a lot of that, you know, quite honestly goes back. I mean, so you're going to have to suffer through the fact that, and you have on previous discussions, that I'm a history major. So, I mean, you've got to rewind the story on some of that and get why particularly maybe the two states that you talk about don't want federal help as much as maybe they would want to. But I think I think we've got politics overlaid. I think we've got history overlaid there. Again, I think we go back to what we said around the architects of NCLB is – I do firmly believe and choose to do so that those states and all states care about the education of their children, because that's their economic lifeblood, if you just want to just think it through the lens of economics. And so I think that they want the federal help, but they want to be able to shape what that help looks like.
Well,
and I think that's where –
maybe this will give them a chance to do it. Maybe this will give them a chance
exactly.
To do it.
I think ESSA provides that. It provides the structure, the support, and the opportunity for states to really make it their own, make it, you know, what Louisiana needs, make it what Mississippi needs, or South Carolina, or Massachusetts, or wherever, so they can address what they need to do for their educators, their students, and their communities.
It's an interesting time. It really is. Lil, let me go back to you. I had a great discussion last week. There's an organization out there called Learning First, which is the Association of Educational Associations, okay? I think learningfirst.org. And Rich Long, who really understands federal policy, is their new executive director. And he's on my show quite often. He's a great guy. And, Lil, when we talk about personalized learning, and I'm just going to do the math here, you got 25 kids in a class or so, okay, times five classes, that's 125 kids. Okay, that's a lot more work than doing one lesson plan for 25. It's 125 out there. And which brings up the subject. Well, all this sounds good, and Matt touched on it for a second, I think, professional development. Okay, and, you know, so that teachers have time for professional learning, to understand this, to plan, et cetera. Lil, is there any talk within ESSA or the varied states? You guys work with a lot of states about giving teachers more time to do this and do this right, and professional development to help them along? Lil.
Yeah, so
You're on your way to your PhD, so just answer that one and you're in good shape. Yeah, right.
Well, I wish I had a good positive answer for you on this one. The reality is
you don't have
that
to.
The federal conversation around teachers and leaders, really the sort of energy was sucked out of the room because of the focus on what became a very toxic, you know, educator evaluation system. That the federal government had, you know, under the Obama administration's leadership, had really kind of prescribed states to do, you know, first as participation in Race to the Top, later as participation in the waiver program.
Right.
And so states were having this, you know, very challenging conversation around how to evaluate educator performance based on whether they were moving student scores on the end of year high stakes assessments. And so when it came time to reauthorize the Elementary and Secondary Education Act and ESSA conversations began, the only thing people could agree on is let's just take that requirement out and get rid of it and throw it away. So when we actually started talking about kind of the bread and butter issues like professional development, how do we create a workforce that's ready to educate our students, especially in these increasingly personalized learning environments, the only real sort of changes in the statute were to allow more or to write in more allowable uses of the big federal pot of funding for professional development, so the Title II pot. Now, the good news is, so I'll spin this now a good way, is that that pot is incredibly flexible. It always has been. And so states have an opportunity to do something different here if they want to.
Right.
And some of the recommendations that we've put forward are, first, as a state, come together and develop a set of statewide instructional competencies that reflect the skills professional capacities that you want your educators to be able to demonstrate to teach in personalized learning environments. Then align all elements of your educator workforce system to that. So your pre-service programs that are preparing our educators to enter the field.
Mm-hmm.
Align those to these instructional competencies. Align your certification policies to these instructional competencies so that instead of, you know, kind of antiquated definitions of what we think a teacher looks like, we actually begin to reflect these new teaching roles that we're seeing emerge in these personalized learning environments. Align your professional development system, again, so that teachers have the same personalized pathways that we want for students. If I'm a teacher, why would I go participate in this one-size-fits-all professional development program when I might have incredibly different needs than my colleague next to me? So, again, think about that. And then lastly, if you're a state that's going to move forward with an educator evaluation system, you're not required to under the new federal law, but I suspect most will. If you are going to proceed with that, again, align it to these statewide instructional competencies and your professional development system so that when you are receiving your customized professional development, it makes sense. It's aligned to your evaluation and you're continually improving. So we're hopeful that even though there isn't anything groundbreaking in the new law that would encourage states to go this way, that we can, by talking about this as an incredible opportunity, we can encourage states
right,
to take another look.
Exploring the flexibility, flexibility, as you guys have been talking about. That's incredible. As far as I'm concerned, you've just earned your PhD.
All right. Thank you for that.
Okay. And Dr. Pace, I have the Larry University offers a PhD on Twitter. It's a 140 character dissertation. Just get that out, and you'll have your PhD in no time.
I want to know who your predator is, Larry.
Right. Okay. Don't even worry about that. Don't worry about that. It's a Syrian organization. They're very good. They're very up to date. No, seriously. And Matt, Lillian's very smart. Are you smart too, Matt? Because I have to ask you a question.
Yeah, I will try to be up to Dr.
I don't know if
you can
do it, Matt.
I don't know if I can either.
We've established high standards here, so I don't know. You know, okay. Teacher training, let me just say those two words, teacher training. I'm not talking about PD, okay, when you are a teacher. Okay, things have changed. Lil just said that. We all know that. When you go out, and I assume you do, okay, do you find that teachers are being trained, young people are being trained to be teachers in the way we need them to be teachers? And using these new laws as the example. I mean, here we are. Boom, we're here. Now what?
I mean, I think I'm going to kind of take a different tack a little bit to the question because I would and we'll seek to answer it certainly. But I think the issue that I see, and so I'm actually a product of a master's program at a college of education at a university. So I left there in the late 90s, which I granted was, you know, a long, long time ago now. But I left there with
I hate
you know,
to tell
training
you when I
graduated,
and you're gonna feel much better about yourself if I tell you when I graduated. But
well,
go ahead, yeah.
I left there with training and authentic assessment. I left there with training and project-based learning. I left there with training in thematic instruction. I left there with training in collaborative learning, in mastery-based learning, in competency-based learning. I left there with a wonderful array of tools based on, obviously, theorists, based on actually working in classrooms. Now, this is where there's almost a supply and demand thing here, where had I gone out and taught, there would have been nowhere in the state of Texas at that moment for me to teach that way. It would have been frowned upon because of the structures that were in place in school, where it was about scope and sequence. It was about covering X amount of content per day, per week, benchmark tests. So I think, you know, there's a rub there, right? There's a supply and demand rub. And I think we are seeing more schools of ed, colleges of ed, embrace these sorts of things. But we also need the system, the K-12 system, to shift towards it. So we kind of need both systems to shift back towards a more personalized, authentically assessed sort of system. And both now are somewhere in between because they're not sure where each of them is. So this is where having unsiloed conversations could be really, really productive. And I think we're seeing that in some states like Maine and New Hampshire where you're seeing shifts for competency-based education. And so the colleges and the universities are beginning to engage on that front, in particular around how they're training teachers. So the teachers are successful and don't need to be essentially rebooted prior to they graduate. Now we need to reboot them so they can actually teach in the school. So I think the systems of ed, as they shift to be more personalized, can then have those really unsiloed conversations because it is, at this point, all about supply and demand.
And thank you for mentioning the great state of Maine where I live. Okay, I appreciate that, in New Hampshire where I raised my kids. All right. And Matt, I'm going to ask you your PhD question. Do you have a PhD, Matt?
I do not. I do not.
All right, you'll have one by the end of the show. All right.
There you go.
All right, here we go. We're always talking about personalized learning. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes here, okay? How do we know that personalized learning works? I'm speaking, you talk to any old fart in any community, they'll say, I learned, they had chalk, they had one book, it worked great. I don't know what we need to do with this. How do we know personalized learning works? Matt.
Well, I'm going to tell you specifically about a place I was at last week. I was at Boston Day and Evening Academy. It is a school. It's a Boston public charter school. It is for students that are over-accredited or under-accredited over age. So these are kids that have dropped out for various reasons. They're all under 23 years old because that's a state law. And it's a competency-based environment. So it's personalized around what these students need. They can graduate on a quarterly basis. You know, they have rolling graduations throughout the year. And in listening to these students talk, is one of the students said, you know, look, my family circumstances, my mental health circumstances, and the education system took my voice away. This school gave me my voice back.
Wow.
Another student said, look, I dropped out of high school with a 1.0 GPA. She was actually attending Boston Latin, which is known to be a very good public school, one of the best in the country. She dropped out with a 1.0. She went back to Boston Day and Evening, has a 3.55. She's graduating next quarter with a scholarship. You know, I have another student that never had a relationship with a teacher, kindergarten through ninth grade when he dropped out. Never had a positive relationship. He now has relationships, he talks about, with each and every one of his teachers. So those students, which are the hardest of the hard students to get through, high minority, at risk in multiple factors, including homelessness, including juvenile records, including mental health, and that competency-based, personalized focus that they have works for these kids.
That was very well said, and it's so good to hear those kind of things. Okay, we want this to work so that these kids never drop out. and they don't have to go to Boston day and evening. They can get all this in their regular school. It's great. I present to you your doctorate, Matt. You did good.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And Dr. Pace, it's really not worth going to any more college. You now have your doctorate. Okay, Dr. Pace, you did equal. Dr. Pace, you did equally well, I might add, from Larry University.
Excellent. We won't make you pick a valedictorian.
Okay, and I'll get you a little mortarboard hat, and we'll be in good shape. That's just terrific and excellent. And as I always say, knowledgeworks.org knows what they're talking about. And it's just a pleasure to have both of you here. So have a great rest of the week. It's Monday. Enjoy your week in Virginia and Cincinnati. Okay, home of the Nationals, home of the Reds, and we'll have a good baseball season. Okay?
Absolutely. Take care.
Thank you so much,
guys. This was wonderful. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Dr. Lillian. Thanks, Matt. Dr. Lillian Pace and Dr. Matt Williams, newly doctorate from the Larry University. What a great show. That was terrific. And we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, and we'll tweet it out yet again. You can learn more. And I wanted to mention, I forgot to actually, Lillian mentioned this. Okay, just go over to knowledgeworks.org/ESSA. knowledgeworks.org/, it's actually /policy-ESSA for a wonderful report, that report that Lillian, Dr. Pace, dimensioned to us. And also I see on that same page, Mary Kankel. And Mary, I got to thank you for making sure I got all the information for this show ahead of time. And, of course, Chris Charbonneau. Okay, so everybody have a good Cincinnati day down there enjoying Izzy Cadet's corned beef. We're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio. Thank you so much, Knowledge Works. It was great. knowledgeworks.org/ESSA. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening.